Episode 8, folks, back in the Cave of Solitude. I'm Eric Anthony, and my co-host is still on hiatus somewhere in Mexico, sunbathing on the beach. So I brought the actual host that everybody wants. Get your name, kid.
Daphne J.
Daphne J is back. And she's done it again. She went to my comic book shelf of graphic novels, and she picked a very interesting book, but I wasn't actually too surprised by it because of the author and artist are one of your favorites. So this week we're going to get into the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, Daredevil book. What's it called?
It was all yellow.
That's right. To quote Coldplay, it's Daredevil Yellow. And what made you pick it? What made you pick Daredevil Yellow? And you also read, before you continue, sorry to interrupt you before you start speaking, you read Spider-Man Blue and Hulk Gray. Like, you're voraciously going through the collection. It's crazy. I can't even keep up with you right now. And they're all Marvel books. No guy with the pointy ears. Except for Daredevil,
actually.
Little horns. Yeah. So what made you go with the Man Without Fear this time?
I think I just kind of wanted to give something a shot, and you've always said that there was some similarities to Daredevil and Batman, the way that they would
operate at night.
Yeah.
They're very much agents of justice. They're bent on the law and justice, making sure that justice is served in some capacity. But there's obvious differences, so anybody that might be listening saying, no, Daredevil's not like Batman or whatever, I get it. They're very different, but they're similar in a lot of ways. Did you find that there's a certain similarity when you read it?
A certain similarity.
A feel.
Yeah, okay. I agree with your thoughts on it, so I thought I'd give it a shot. And because I wasn't really familiar with Daredevil, I guess this Yellow series was kind of an origin story. So it was going to allow me to start fresh, start new, and just have a nice beginning
introduction
to who Daredevil is and what drives him, his story. So I just thought it would be interesting.
Cool. Speaking of Daredevil, I have to make a correction from the last episode we did on Civil War. And I got to give you kudos for how well you brought out certain points of the book that, even though I had read it myself recently, I wasn't paying attention to. And one of those things that you mentioned was you asked a question about Daredevil in that book. And I kind of dismissed it, thinking that I just, oh, yeah, this is the reason why. But you noted that fact that, hey, isn't Daredevil supposed to be blind?
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking around, and you could see his eyes.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, when that book had come out, it kind of messed a couple people up, because it looks like Matt Murdock.
Okay.
Right? The red hair. All the features,
mm-hmm.
and they were all wearing disguises, as you mm-hmm. as you pointed out, right? They're all giving each other aliases to hide.
Yeah.
So the guy who was Daredevil in that book was not Matt Murdock. You were right. He wasn't blind.
Oh.
But they dressed him up to look like Matt Murdock, and the artist did that on purpose at the time. They did that on purpose as like a joke on the fact that this isn't actually Matt Murdock, but we're going to make the guy look like him. So what was happening was, there's another character named Iron Fist, Danny Rand. I got one of the books on the shelf.
Okay.
And he was masquerading as Daredevil as a favor to Matt Murdock, because Matt Murdock's identity had been exposed. So to hide the fact that Matt Murdock is really Daredevil, Danny Rand was...
Oh, he did him a solid and played the role of Daredevil.
To make people distinguish the two, right?
Oh.
So you noticed that based on the interaction between the characters, and it was something I just dismissed because, oh, it's Daredevil. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about Marvel, what was happening in the Marvel Universe during those years.
Well, I can understand why you were perhaps easily mistaken or easily dismissed it, because it looked like Matt Murdock.
Exactly.
So, and that was something, and I didn't know that.
And I learned that after the fact, because I'm like, I should actually give that a little bit more, figure that out, because you asked a good question. So, good on you. You were paying more attention than I was, and you brought out some good points in that book. So, high five to Daphne J.
High five.
Okay, so, I never got a chance to do a news segment last time, because we usually don't do that together. But, there was, on the last episode, we didn't do anything, no news or anything like that, like I usually do with Jay Siegel. But I figured this week I wanted to get your opinion on something because it's worthwhile to discuss and we got to stay up to date with things that are happening. And I thought you would be interested in the casting of characters for a DC movie coming out.
Okay.
I don't know if you had seen it in Page Six of the Metro or anything like that, but they had cast all of the Suicide Squad members. That's going to be coming out August 5th, 2016.
I saw some, I think. So okay, hit me.
So who did you see so far? You're not sure? Okay, there was
I think I saw... Wasn't Arrow's cousin gonna be one of the guys?
Actually, he's in the Flash show. The real-life Stephen Amell's cousin is gonna be Firestorm in the Flash
show. Oh, okay, I'm confusing it with... See, no, you gotta tell me, because I see people and I confuse them all.
So the Suicide Squad, you know them more from... You know them from
the Arrow show. Wasn't Common supposed to be a villain? The rapper Common?
He was going to be in a supposed Justice League movie that was going to come out that never was made.
Okay.
But you got it.
No, I'm seeing faces, but yeah. I don't know what category, because I've seen them everywhere, and now I'm... Just go. Do it.
Well, the Suicide Squad, you've seen it from the
Arrow show. I know what it is. Yeah. I'm just saying that because I've seen so many people playing this role, potentially playing that role, I'm confused now as to who's doing what and where. So hit it.
All right.
Which one?
Okay, so Harley Quinn is going to be played by Margot Robbie. I don't really know anything she's done. Do you know who she is? I'll show you a picture of her. She's been in Wolf on Wall Street, which we didn't watch. Pan Am. I think she looks like she can play the role, for sure, of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
You
know who could play the role of Harley Quinn?
Tell me.
You know that song, Ceilings? No. What's it called? Walls? Oh, Chandelier.
The little girl in that
video? This little psycho kid that's in this video. Everything about what she's doing with the eyes, the hair... The antics, like her body, the way it moves.
Yeah.
Freaky. Like, if that was
that person, like, costume.
Maybe 20 years older.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, this kid. In this music video of the Chandelier.
You're right. It was very
And Harley it was Quinn-esque. Our wild card who I actually did think it right there, but he said it I did.
Yeah.
We were like on point.
Yeah. Give him credit for pointing that out. Tom Hardy. Who's Bane?
Yeah,
he's going to be Rick Flagg. I'm not very familiar myself with the Suicide Squad. I know that they are a popular storyline written by John Ostrander back in the 80s, late 80s, after the Crisis on Infinite Earths. But now they're reestablished again. And we saw the latest version we would have seen of them is in the animated Batman movie. Attack on Arkham or Assault on Arkham.
Mm-hmm.
That was all the Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Made.
So Tom Hardy's going to be in another DC movie in the relaunched universe. And then the biggest name is Will Smith.
No. He's in Cyborg.
Deadshot.
Oh, Deadshot.
Deadshot. You know the guy from...
No, I know who Deadshot is.
They're going to get...
What are you doing to me?
They're going to be... he's going to be Deadshot. What do you think of that?
Why would I say Cyborg? He's a good guy. Oh my goodness.
That's okay.
Next.
What? I didn't know Daredevil wasn't blind in that book. Don't worry about it. We all make mistakes and I should be ashamed of myself.
No, because when I listen back on our podcast and then you're like, Daphne, what would you want to do in Marvel, whatever, like the team ups in Marvel? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Arrow and Green Lantern? That's obviously DC.
Yeah, that's okay.
You just have like a brain fart
in
the moment. Okay, he's doing who now? Deadshot?
He's going to be Deadshot.
Hmm.
That's interesting. It's not a big deal. He's got the body type for sure. I think he has the attitude.
And Deadshot's older, right?
He's a little bit older, like more of a senior member. Not a senior citizen, but member of the team. Yeah.
Heh.
And Jared Leto.
I know who that is.
Okay.
He's a singer.
Yep.
Didn't he play... He's a good actor, that guy.
Yeah, he just recently won an Oscar. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the Joker.
I knew that.
You knew that?
I was saying it in my head. I'm like, I think he's doing the Joker.
Yeah. I think it's a good...
it's a good pick.
And I give him credit for it because after Dark Knight...
Yeah.
And everything that Heath Ledger has established as the new version of... Or the new take on the Joker. More of this, like...
Gothic...
Heroin addict, yeah. Psycho type of Joker. It's pretty brave for him to try to take on what's become an iconic role.
Well, somebody at some point was going to have to do it.
Right, but good for him for giving it the shot. And I think he'll nail it.
But I agree with you that there's going to be some kind of pressure. There's going to be a comparison and... It's going to be one of the ones that you want to see.
Yeah.
You're going to be excited to see it, but if he screws it up, severe criticism.
But, I mean, Will Smith, he's a good actor.
You know what I don't like? Okay, I'll tell you something.
Okay.
Probably has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Okay. But I have this thing about people who play superheroes, villains. I like... these no-name people, or even if they are popular, people that are not, I want to look past the character. You know what I mean?
Or the actor.
I'm going to see him, and I'm just going to see Will Smith. Unless he sells me the role.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like, I think it was when Superman first came out, the new one here with the Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
I told you this. I'm like, yeah. I need it to be someone where I don't know them. Because I want to see the character that they're playing. I don't want to see the actor.
Right.
That's my problem with these big names in Hollywood playing these roles.
Right.
These fictitious roles. Because now it's almost like it's even more fake. Because you have this guy.
Yeah, like you can't, it's not believable that they're playing that character. And you know what? I agree with you. But then I think about Robert Downey Jr. And I never thought that I could picture him being a superhero
type of character. True, but that's what I'm saying. It's been, I think though it's happened so many, there's been more times that it has failed than it having been successful, having a superstar play a role and actually hit the nail on the
head. What about Chris Evans? He was a pretty well-known face and established star. He was also another superhero in the Marvel U.
Yeah.
And then I can't see him as anything but Captain America now.
But that's what I'm saying. I think he owned that role so much and he played it so well. He had the look. Like he physically, like I don't think he was that big when he played the Human Torch in Fantastic Four. I don't think so. The way he's bulked up for Captain America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he owned it physically, everything, the attitude, the innocent, you know, I want justice kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there was CGI when he was at the scrawny little thing.
Yeah, of course, but some of the
playing
best
the actual character.
Yeah.
Not Steve Rogers, but Captain America.
Yeah.
I think he played it off. Like, I don't know.
Well, you know, that's the one thing that I got...
And that's why it got me nervous.
Yeah.
When they started talking about...
Ben Affleck.
Ugh. But still nervous.
But you know what? I've seen him lately.
Those pictures are selling it.
Yeah.
They're doing it.
He looks like Bruce Wayne.
But I'm still nervous.
Yeah. And you know what? Not getting on... Going off on a tangent, but... Everybody... When they think of Ben Affleck playing a superhero, it's Daredevil. Which is what we're talking about today, so it's fitting. But... That role, I don't think, was his fault. And I don't think we should base him as Daredevil as to what it's going to be like as an older version of Bruce Wayne, Batman. I still hope it's good, though. I still got to see it. I got to see.
Yeah,
There hasn't been any action sequences to see what he's actually like.
Yeah.
You know, but...
I hear you.
I think it's a pretty interesting casting call. And before we move on, Amanda Waller. Obviously, Suicide Squad, she's got to be in it.
Yeah.
Who would you pick as Amanda Waller off the top of your head? So you know her in the comics, when you read the Superman, Batman, Public Enemies. You know what Amanda Waller looks like there.
Yeah.
And then you've seen her...
On Arrow.
It's drastically different.
I think a happy medium that would make me happy, not a superstar per se. This is at the top of my head.
Top of your head.
just the top of my head. If I were to think about it, I'd probably give you another name. I would say the Viola Davis.
And that's who it is.
No.
Yeah? Yeah, you got it.
I was right. You were right. Let me see that.
You got it's Viola Davis.
Get out.
That's right.
What?
High five again.
No.
They were talking about Oprah possibly playing her. I could see Oprah's doing that role.
I could see her be mean.
Yeah. Angela Bassett was not Viola Davis. Angela Bassett was Amanda Waller in the Green Lantern movie.
Yes. Yes, she was.
But it wasn't, like, really close, true to character.
No, but the fact could, is she played the role. She could do it.
She could do it. But she Viola Davis mean. Is perfect medium.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Look at that, huh? Yeah.
So, it's... They're kind of going for, like, me and Jay Siegel said this before, kind of that attempt at a team that not the regular Joe would know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Justice League. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And they might get it, hopefully.
Okay, so so they're doing a movie strictly about the Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
And they're not featuring in some superhero.
No.
It's them.
It's them. There's rumor that Jesse Eisenberg will be in it, reprising his role as Lex Luthor, tying it into the DC movie universe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to come out after the same year, but after Superman Batman. Movie.
Oh.
Batman v Superman, yeah.
Okay.
So they're trying to build their universe.
Alright.
We'll see how that goes.
Okay.
So good job picking Viola Davis. High five.
One out of how many?
Woof. You didn't know.
That's true.
So, hey. Alright. So we'll move on to our book now. Daredevil. Yellow. You've never read Daredevil before.
No.
You've read very little Marvel.
Yes.
Your introduction to Marvel thus far. How are you finding it? Are you enjoying it?
I know it's nothing to be ashamed of. But, yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
So far.
There hasn't been anything that's been like, yeah, I'm sick of this. I can't stand it. I gotta go back. It's generated interest.
Yes.
So what did you know about Daredevil, the character? What was your exposure to him prior to reading Yellow?
The Ben Affleck movie.
And what was your honest opinion of that when we first saw that in theaters? We were kids. What did you think of it then? I know now it's very much maligned. People don't, you know, they criticize it heavily.
Perhaps it was good for its time, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Also, because we were younger, it was kind of just it was just exciting to have another superhero movie. So, it was cool, in a way, I guess. But I do remember watching it, and I'm like, there were parts. Maybe not the whole movie, again, because we were young and didn't know any better. But there was parts of the movies where, like, was thoroughly disappointed.
I think at the time, like, I was excited for the fact that it was another superhero movie coming out. And it was fun to go to the theater and watch this, but it wasn't anything that was life-changing or...
No.
Like, it wasn't like, wow, I gotta go out and
no.
Figure out, read Daredevil.
Well, there was so many, like... Oh, it was, some parts were just so cheese.
Yeah,
the overacting and the stupid facial expressions and Bullseye. Who played it? Phil Collins?
Colin Farrell.
Sorry.
But yeah, you could.
And the dude that played Kingpin.
Yeah.
I did not like the way that was done. It was just, it wasn't good. It was, I guess it was entertaining for at the time
you,
that it
happened. So you're saying you didn't like. You didn't like Ben Affleck and Jennifer Aniston fighting in the park during daytime on seesaws, having that little interchange? That wasn't cool for
that,
you?
That was...
That was horrible!
Okay, wait, let me rethink this. They were on the seesaw, right?
Oh,
that
bad.
That going up
yeah,
and down. And
yeah,
that was...
Yeah.
Okay, I'm being honest.
Yeah, give me your opinion.
When it came out, when I was like, what, 12? 14.
No. You were 12.
15? I don't want to admit to being too old and
You already had your job at the mall. We went right after you were finished your job at the
mall. I got a job before I should have been working.
No, okay, this we were almost at the end of high school we saw this.
Like, a lie. No. I started working. No, okay, first. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Because I had that job the other time. Yeah.
It's okay. We don't have to go through job histories here. But yeah, like, it didn't age well. It didn't age well.
No, it did. No. Okay, yeah, it was crap. It was a crap movie.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Oh, terrible. Yeah, and then you know what? I never wanted to read anything.
Because of that. And you know what? I tell a lot of people, they ask me, oh, what are you reading now? And I'll tell them I'm reading this great Daredevil book. Like, Daredevil?
You know what was good about that scene?
Tell me.
It was in the day.
Okay.
Didn't really see a lot of fight scenes in the middle of the day that I remember.
Okay.
Because you want to see the action moves. You want to see them do the stuff. So those high kicks and those little blocking.
CGI in that was bad, though, when they would show
it. It was a terrible movie. I'm just trying to tell you what little tidbits were...
what you liked at the time. What you found entertaining.
Yeah. What worked a little bit. Terrible movie. Terrible.
But when I went back, because this is Daredevil and you've the first time reading it, we'll do a little bit of a backstory on the character. So Daredevil was a Stan Lee and Jack Kirby creation. But he was kind of like a Spider-Man-esque character in the sense of, you know, being in New York City. He wasn't a kid. He was a full-grown man, but he was like, you know, a guy in New York City swinging around. Difference was he was a blind guy who had his extrasensory powers, right? But the book, after a while, became kind of hokey. It was on the verge of cancellation in the late 70s. It just wasn't reaching an audience. And then Frank Miller came on the book.
He changed it.
This was prior to him doing anything for Batman. Mm-hmm. Frank Miller really made a name for himself drawing and then later on writing Daredevil. And it's still probably the definitive version of that character. I would venture to say that his impact on the character of Daredevil and what he accomplished writing that book for, I think it was 4 to 5 years worth of work that he did on that book, is probably more impactful for that character than, in a way, what he did on Batman. Because he wouldn't have gotten the chance to do what he did with Batman
if he didn't do so well with Daredevil.
Right. If he didn't show what he could do with Daredevil. And it's on record that some of the stuff that he ended up doing with Batman, like in Dark Knight Returns and in Year One, were story arcs or plots that were he wanted to try doing with Daredevil, but Marvel editorial said, no, we don't want to go there with this character. It's too far. Mm-hmm. It's too dark. So when he went to DC, one of the things he said that he wanted in his contract or that they would give him is a lot more free range. This is where I want to go with the character. I want to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. Give me some type of carte blanche with Batman. And he wrote the beginning of Batman's career down to the end of it. Mm-hmm. Right?
But what I'm amazed by carte blanche. What was that?
Anything he wants. Whatever he wants to do, he can do.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm advocating for the listeners. Because maybe they're like, what? Car wash, what?
No, I don't think so. So, everything that he had done with this character was some of the best stuff in comic books. I highly recommend it to anybody who wants to read good stories. Great artwork, especially back then. This was late 70s, early 80s. What he did was unprecedented for the time. He really changed the art form.
Set the bar.
He set the bar extremely high. He made the character dark. Yeah. He gave him, it was like noir detective in the city, very street level type of crime.
Isn't it kind of the way Batman's written today is based, it's based on how Frank Miller then portrayed him.
Exactly. A lot of writers today, that the Batman that you like was, is a lot of it is inspired from that darkness that Batman was given from Frank Miller.
Right.
But that was really stemming from his work on Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And everything that, like you read in Daredevil Yellow, the character of Karen and why it's so important to Matt, there's a very, very hugely popular and successful and artistically high watermark of work that Frank Miller did with David Mazzucchelli, who mm-hmm. did Year One, same mm-hmm. duel. It's called Born Again. And if you read that, this book will have probably a little bit more weight for you. But,
okay.
But this is a great entry point for someone who never read Daredevil. All
right.
And Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, where would you have known them from before?
The Long Halloween.
There you go. So it was kind of cool that you picked this series of Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, and Hulk Gray.
To be honest with you, that I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I have said multiple in other episodes in the past, I don't pay attention to who's drawing what, who's writing what. It just so happens that I always end up picking the same kind of... I like these guys, and it just so happens I keep picking up their work.
Yeah.
But I did notice within the artwork, I'm like, oh, I don't like it. And then I'm like...
The faces are kind of ugly.
Right. And then I'm like, I feel like I've seen this before. And then I was liking it. And then I'm like, I've had this feeling mm-hmm. before. And I'm like, I remember I had the same initial thoughts, the same feelings, and then I had an appreciation, all in that order, for Long Halloween.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what's happening here? And then I looked, and I looked at the back of the book, and lo and behold, I found out it's the same two dudes that ended up doing Long Halloween and Dark Victory.
Yeah.
Amazing graphic novels right there.
Two of your favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And what Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb were known for was taking very well-known characters like Batman, Superman, and then Daredevil, Spider-Man, Hulk, and making miniseries, 12-issue series or 6-issue miniseries in this case, and going back to the beginning
mm-hmm.
of their careers to And it's interesting with Long Halloween, for instance. Why do we always talk about Batman with you? With Long Halloween, for instance, he built off of the world that Frank Miller built in Year One. He mm-hmm. took the Falcons. Mm-hmm. He took everything that happened and did, like, the next chapter.
Yeah.
Years later.
Mm-hmm.
But he built off of that world.
Mm.
And then Daredevil, he kind of did the same thing. So it kind of goes to show the impact that Frank Miller had in the 80s on these major characters mm-hmm. and how they continue to influence what people would write about later. So, what do you like personally about Tim Sale's artwork? Based upon your history of reading it now in all of these books. And I don't know if you would remember this, but remember I was reading to you that night the Superman for All Seasons?
Yeah.
Same two guys.
Oh, okay.
So you get the vibe that they go for.
Yeah.
And the artwork... The style.
Yeah, the artwork always initially throws me off. I'm like, oh, why does he look like that?
Why does Superman look like a loaf of bread?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but then after you're reading it, like, yeah, that's perfect. That's the way you should look.
Yeah.
So what do you like about Tim Sale's artwork? You initially don't like it, but what is it about it eventually that brings you to say, like, this is great?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. It's just... It always takes a minute, and then it's almost like it complements the story. I just feel like it just brings the story, the writing, into light, and I can't really form it into words
mm-hmm.
exactly. It's just, I just know in the beginning, I'm like, heh, what's happening? And then I'm like, okay, I get it. It's complementing the story.
Yeah. Because these Jeff Loeb, I think he's an expert at bringing the character back to square one, kind of writing something nostalgic about them, taking it back to their beginnings, their grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Sale's artwork complements that perfectly. It has that nostalgic feel. with the Superman for All Seasons, he had that Norman Rockwell type of artwork, very Americana. And in this one, he really captures the, like, this is taking place in the 60s. The art, the way people are dressed, their character designs, the way the buildings in New York are still looking, is very much back in the time when Daredevil was first introduced to the world. This doesn't take place in the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I love that about it. I love his character designs. I love their body language.
Yeah.
You really get a sense of that. And
see, you're saying
what you're thinking.
Yeah, what I'm thinking without me saying it.
Yeah. And I like, I've started to realize that I like comic book art where the, like, I really liked Civil War. I didn't express too much of what I liked about it. But I find that when the artwork is such high resolution and it almost seems very digitally enhanced,
mm-hmm.
I'm not as captivated by it as I am when I see kind of the fact that it's been drawn, penciled.
Like it looks raw.
It's a little bit more of that raw feel.
Mm-hmm.
I know Jim Lee is someone that I really like and his stuff is very
crisp,
perfect word.
Yeah.
But I feel like I see the pencils in it still. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel it so digitally touched. Like the lines are all just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's lots of detail. And it's a perfect description of what that, those rendering of what those characters should look like. But I like feeling those pencils. And I feel with Tim Sale, you really get that. And it's interesting. Did you know that he was colorblind?
No.
Yeah, he is colorblind. So it's quite cool that the books are all named after colors.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it kind of adds a little bit
like of... Like altogether colorblind?
I don't
or like
know.
Certain colors?
I'm not sure. I think it might be altogether from what I've read or what I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he still, as much as this isn't so digitally enhanced as I was expressing to you, there's still so much attention to detail. Like he really sets... When you enter a room on those first pages of each book, he really lets you know... The dress setting, the way that the setting is all dressed up,
mm-hmm.
he really lets you know where you're getting
where
yourself
they are.
Into. Yeah, when it's like a bar scene, he gives you a full scene of what it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
and then he really gives, like, look at the room here. All the little...
Yeah.
You kind of miss it at first when you pay attention to it. It's like the way everything is folded, where things are lined up. It's great, and it brings you back... to that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the watercolor type of coloring that you get in it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a description in the back of the book of how he creates the effects, the moods of the room. It's like this texture type of ink wash that he does that you see it in the way that just in this picture, for instance, I just flipped to with a bowling ball, the way it's being thrown. It's not that typical comic book art today where
yeah.
It's so...
But it's there's no detail. There aren't the little three hole things, but you know exactly what it is.
And you feel the motion of it just the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
As much as his kind of characters are kind of... They look kind of frumpy and not the best looking,
mm-hmm.
you can
still... Yeah, because sometimes, look, he looks like he had a Matt brought Murdock.
Yeah.
Looks like he has a flat facial profile.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look masculine, superhero type at all. But in some pictures, he looks very handsome, very... obvious, very square jaw.
And you still get the fact that Matt Murdock's a handsome man, even though it's not necessarily drawn outrightly like that. You get that sense. I really like this splash page with him and Electro when they have this battle. I know we're jumping around everywhere and you guys can't see the picture, but whoever has a Daredevil yellow book, it's cool because he drew it knowing that it would be dead center
right
in the middle.
Right dead center in the book, yeah.
So he balanced everything to fit properly.
Yeah.
And then to make sure that he captured... Everything that would be happening with the water about to drop on the electricity, all the machinery behind it,
mm-hmm.
it's just beautiful. Gorgeous artwork. So kudos to Tim Sale for that. I love his stuff. And it continues in the Spider-Man Blue that we'll discuss next time. But Jeff Loeb's writing. The story. Let's talk about the story. How did you feel about it? Did it capture you? Was it too sappy? You want to give them a little synopsis of what was happening in the book?
So it starts off with Matt Murdock, or Daredevil, mm-hmm. Just talking to someone. And then you end up finding out he's kind of just talking to himself. I think, actually, he's writing a letter.
Yeah, he's writing it like almost therapeutic, mm-hmm. like to let it out.
And it actually references to his friend having told him to probably do this, to consider writing this letter. And he writes it as though he's talking to this particular person. And you end up finding out to whom he is giving this, referring this letter to.
Yeah, the first piece of dialogue, he says, "Dear Karen, I'm afraid. Yeah. Man without fear.
Yeah.
I'm afraid." And it was Foggy who's giving him this advice to mm-hmm. almost therapeutically let out his feelings as though the person were still there.
Mm-hmm.
In the first issue, though, like, what is... He spends most of his time talking about his dad.
Mm-hmm.
What did you find about that relationship? Like, was it a heartbreaker for you?
It was. It made me sad. Because it seemed like... You could tell how much he loved his dad.
Yeah.
And although he wasn't the ideal father, you know, he didn't have this sharp, you know, job, and he wasn't, you know, didn't have the money, and he wasn't the brightest or whatever it was. He wasn't the all true American dad or whatever people like to say, but he still loved him unconditionally and saw him as his hero.
Yeah.
Although he had his limitations and his weaknesses.
Yeah.
And he never pretended that he was any better than anybody else, his father.
Yeah.
He would always say, "This is who I am. These are my faults. I don't want you to be like me."
Yeah.
"Be better."
Yeah.
And Matt, it was kind of sad.
Oh, yeah.
So when things transpired the way they did, it was even more of a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
He didn't have to be the perfect dad to have that unconditional love.
Yeah.
From this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you get a little bit more, if you do decide to read more Daredevil, you'll get a little bit more backstory with him and his dad and how much his father wanted him to... Not like it's definitely spoken about in this book. Like, his dad did not want him to ever train, use his fists for anything.
Mm-hmm. He wanted him to go to school, be educated, be a lawyer, exactly.
Be better than me, do better for yourself, make your mother proud. Because mm-hmm. his mother had left, you don't know exactly where she had gone because the father was a bit of a mess for a while. And later on in the Daredevil stories, you find out who his mother is, it's pretty interesting. But he was always wanting his son to elevate his life status, even when he had become blind. And I think there was a time where he had seen that Matt was training sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's not addressed in this book, but he had laid the law down with him. He says, "You are not allowed to do this because you've got to be better than that." But it is extremely touching how much he loved his father in the book. And it wasn't one of those tragedies of losing his parents when he's a boy.
Mm-mm.
It was as an adult. He was already in law school
mm-hmm.
in this book.
He got the privilege of growing up with his father, being raised by him, and knowing the type of person that his father was.
Yeah.
And his father knowing who he was.
And his dad was... He was in a very seedy business, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was a boxer, but on the side, he was also an enforcer for the underworld. And at the end of his life, he rose to the occasion and became a man of integrity because he wanted to make his son proud.
Yeah.
Whether or not his son knew all the details of everything, it was very important for him to make sure that he left his son with a memory to be proud of. And it inspires everything that he does in his life.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, Jeff Loeb is very good, I think, at capturing in all of his books that relationship that the hero has with the person he's lost. He does it really well with Spider-Man as well. In this book, he nails it for me. And even in the Superman for All Seasons, which we should read. That's a good one. I think you would enjoy it. He does a lot of the characters in Superman's life narrate each book and really give you an in-depth look at how, introspective look at how they view the mm-hmm, person. Mm-hmm. I think Jeff Loeb is great at doing that. Did you think, though, that it would have been more powerful if he had been writing the letter to his dad in this book instead of Karen? Because he's saying to Karen how much he misses her and all this stuff, but the majority of the book he's explaining a lot of his relationship with his father. Do you think it would have been a better angle to tell this story as Matt speaking to his dad, writing a letter to his dad and thanking him? And what do you think?
Probably. I see where you're going with this, and on an emotional level, perhaps it would have given it more, I don't know, an oomph, like something, another heartstring to pull on. Yeah. But because of how Matt has explained how opposed his dad was to him leading any type of physical training or anything like that, he would never want to disclose that to his dad.
Yeah.
So maybe that would be him disappointing his father.
Okay.
So he's not going to want to...
He wouldn't want to have that conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's interesting.
That's what I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No, that's what you think is more important than what anyone else thinks, because only you feel that way, right? No one else might share that, so it's important. As far as the character himself, Matt Murdock, how do you feel about him, as a superhero in this genre, right? What do you think of his, you know, his backstory in regards to his father, but the life that he leads? It's pretty interesting, his double life.
Mm-hmm.
As a lawyer,
mm-hmm,
who believes so much in the law,
mm-hmm,
and exercising the law, that it's a perfect balance. But then, at nighttime, he's out for justice. So there's a clear...
Well, because the justice system failed him when it came to them trying to take to justice those that were responsible for this evil, crazy act that was done against him and his family.
Yeah.
So he felt that he had to take matters into his own hands and deal with it accordingly.
Yeah. I think that's a really cool aspect to take a character who's blind, and they say justice is blind,
mm-hmm,
and he completely believes in the law and upholds it. Like, he's... Matt Murdock is the type... He's had stories where he's defended his own rogues, his own villains, because they've been accused of a crime that he knows they didn't commit. So as Matt Murdock, he makes sure that they don't get tried for that crime.
No.
But he'll know that they did something else. And as Daredevil, he'll go and make sure that that's rectified. It's such a...
That's cool.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying Daredevil is an awesome character. Like...
Huh.
Anybody who
it's
has
a little twisted, but it's cool.
Right, it's so confusing, and that's one of the cool things. As you continue to read Daredevil,
that's if I continue.
If you start to see how broken of a person this guy becomes. They break him down a lot in the comic books.
Hmm.
Kind of break him down mentally, make him go a little crazy because of this juxtaposition of fighting for the law, but then going out for justice. It should be one and the same, but it's not always. And it puts him at odds with himself sometimes.
Hmm.
And his identity is often given away. And Karen is actually the first person to sell his identity.
What?
Yeah, that's why it's such a deep relationship with him and Karen. After she...
Boo.
You remember who she was in the movie? She's in the movie, yeah. She's
okay,
the secretary.
I'll tell you who I remember. I remember Phil Collins.
No, Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. I remember Elektra.
Jennifer Garner, yeah.
Jennifer Garner. I remember, obviously, Daredevil. I remember the Kingpin.
Yeah.
I remember her dad, who was what? He was Iron Man's guy, right? Iron Man's, wasn't that her dad?
No. Her dad, the guy who's Iron Man's bodyguard, is Foggy Nelson in the movie. John Favreau.
No, I know that. But the guy that played her father, wasn't that the guy that played, what was that villain's name in Iron Man 3, I think it was?
I don't think he was in it. No, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Ben Kingsley. No, it wasn't him.
Okay, then I guess I don't remember him. But that's who I don't remember.
There was one more character that you know very well who's in that movie briefly. And I don't want to tell you what show they're on to put you out there. It was like one of your old favorite shows.
I have no idea.
Yes, you do.
No.
Okay, what was one of your favorite shows back in the day? Not back in the day, even 4 years ago. You'd watch it every Thursday.
Are you... Was it the Ellen Pompeo?
Yeah, she played Karen Page in the movie.
Boo.
Yeah.
Forgettable.
You didn't even remember she was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Matt Murdock is, he's a ladies' man. He's got lots of girls. Karen was one of his first loves, and she comes back in his life later on. But he's such a controversial character in his own life. But his relationship with his buddy Foggy is adorable. As much as they're chasing after the same girl, what did you think of that relationship between the two of them?
I thought it was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bromance, I think.
Yeah, and they stayed best friends.
Yeah.
Throughout all of this time.
Yeah.
It's a really cool relationship.
Even when something was going down, like, they were like, look, let's hash it out, because at the end of the day, you're my guy and I'm yours, and all we have is each other.
And it took a long time for Foggy to realize that he was Daredevil.
Oh, I felt so bad for him when he finally, like, when he came to that realization that this was a situation.
Yeah.
And you can see he had, like, flowers, and he had the ring. Like, going to just express and be open and honest about his feelings about this person. And then he sees this cahoodling that's going on between these two. And he didn't address it at that time, but he just, like, head between his, you know, tail between the legs and just took off.
You feel your heart breaks for
him. Yeah, I felt kind of bad.
Yeah. Matt Murdock is a bit of a douche. He is. Like, he's got a douchey side to him. Did you notice it when that was kind of... Because Foggy said, he's like, I'm in love with this girl, I'm going to ask her to marry me. And Matt wasn't like, I'm in love with her too. He was kind of like, oh, all right. I'm going to just canoodle with her. And
I don't think he did that.
He didn't lay off.
But the thing is, you read this more recently than I have, so I don't really remember that. I remember Matt in his letter to, what's her name, Ellen?
Karen. Ellen Pompeo played Karen briefly in the very bad Daredevil movie.
That he had said, we have feelings for the same person. He's going to do this, and he feels like this about you. It's almost like he was expressing his guilt for having feelings for her, because Foggy did.
Yeah.
So I didn't see it as him portraying this douchey attitude. I just thought he knew, but didn't want to address it, because it was just going to make an awkward situation even more awkward.
Yeah.
So he was kind of like... She was the one batting the eyelashes and, you know, being all schmootzy, and she was showing interest in the
character. She was flirtatious.
She was very flirtatious. She was, But I don't think he was the one egging it on. He's a guy. Not that that excuses this type of behavior. But at the end of the day, he's a guy who's getting attention from a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't feel good about that? You know, he doesn't have what every other guy has. He has no sight. He doesn't know what she looks like, but based on his senses, totally knows that she's a knockout, right?
Yeah. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
As much as sometimes I find it very ridiculous that, like, you're reading this, and like, okay, this guy's blind.
But the way he writes it, when he says, like, when you walk into the coffee shop.
Yeah.
I can smell her perfume. Yeah. Or I think it was at the bar. Like, amongst all the cigars and the drinking and whatever, he can sense her presence just based on her perfume, whatever's in her hair. You know, the breeze takes her scent. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something about... He writes this image where it's believable that someone lacking this sense...
Yeah.
Acquires all of these other
senses
are heightened.
Yeah.
And you, I bought it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, if I was blind, I could make it a day because I would do this and I would get that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you, it doesn't really show it or explain it so much in this book. Do you know how, like, what Daredevil's powers actually are? Because of his senses and his heightened sense of touch and his smell and his being able to hear a person's heartbeat. Like, did you get an idea of how his powers actually worked for him to be able to stand? There's a really cool shot where he's standing right at the top of Empire State Building, just at the tip, trying to hear, like...
Trying to say my name, my name. Because, he's like, say my name and then I'll find
Karen,
you.
Because Karen was kidnapped by the owl.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to see if he can hear her.
Yeah.
Did you get an idea of what his powers are, his sensory powers, how they work?
No.
I just
figured since...
But even from, like, the movie, do you remember in your brief knowledge of Daredevil?
What, when it would rain, he could see?
Okay, that was something in the movies, yeah. But...
No, I always thought, and I thought that's what they were explaining, that because he was lacking this sense of... The sense of sight?
Yeah.
Is that what... Yeah. That everything else is heightened.
Yeah,
his touch, and that does his happen. Smell, his everything else, right?
Yeah, that does
so happen. That's what I figured what his power was.
It's true. That definitely does happen, but the story is that when the chemicals that blinded him, it was some type of an isotope that brought out a radar sensor in him. So if you would, the best way for me to explain it to you, taking it back to Batman, when Lucius Fox gives Bruce Wayne the sonar thing, and he puts on the thing, he can't make out faces to know
but
the description.
But he can see what's happening around him.
He can see the body
outline.
He can see that there's a pole there. So he's blind to actual images and color, but he knows his surroundings. He knows that there's a guy behind him. He can see the outline of a person. He knows that their body's moving. So it's kind of like a blindness, but it's a sonar.
It's a super sight.
Yeah, it's a sonar that he has. So that's the way it's explained that he's capable of leaping these buildings and doing all of these tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost Spider-Man's level.
Right.
So it kind of helps to make the suspension of disbelief work a little bit more, if you understand that. But I really like that scene of him standing on the top of the Empire State and honing his senses so much, so keenly, trying to hear all the different sounds. I mean, it's a little bit convenient that his hearing suddenly is at Superman level, where he can pick out conversations and hear her name. But I always like when
But he was concentrating, though, on trying to hear her.
And that's the thing about his powers. When they're in action, when you see his... He's one of those characters that's often drawn in motion, seeing how he's moving acrobatically, and I've always loved seeing that artwork in his books and how he's explaining the way his powers work. And that scene at the top of the Empire State with the whole cityscape in front of him, it's great. One of the most powerful scenes in this book was when the guy who killed his father is put on the electric chair and is punished. And the law wins, justice is served, and Matt Murdock thinks that he can't see it, but he feels it's the right thing to do to be there for his dad to know, like, you know, I'm representing my father and justice is going to be served today. But he didn't really feel better about it.
He didn't get that satisfaction.
No. And it was kind of... He even said it. He goes, the good son wanted to see it through to the end. I think I thought I was going to be it was going to be like fighting Electro. Sparks and jolts and excitement, and it wasn't. Mm-hmm. He couldn't see what happened. Do you remember how he described it?
He could smell it.
Yeah. And knowing that all his senses are heightened like that, it was actually kind of sad.
Yeah.
To know that even after all of this, it didn't make him happier.
No.
That loss will never be, no matter what happened, finding justice and it still didn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. That was pretty powerful. Do you feel it was like a comment, like Jeff Loeb was taking that moment to do some commentary on capital punishment, his thoughts of it?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You didn't think anything of it at the time when you read it? Because a lot of times these writers, they kind of throw in their ideas of their political agenda on stuff.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm sure.
Do you think that was kind of his way of being like how disgusting this type of thing is? That even when it's shown in a way where the guy deserves it, it was even disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got that, but maybe not so much. So, I don't want to overly spoil the book for people who haven't read it. We have given spoilers, but we don't got to go through it all. Overall, what do you think of Daredevil now with this first introduction to it?
I would give it another shot.
You read it again?
I think I would do another Daredevil story. I see the similarities that you were saying in regards to Batman.
The sensibilities, like if you have a like for Batman, it's very likely that you'll have your sensibilities will make you like Daredevil.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It wasn't what I thought. I thought it was going to be like, I'm going to lose interest really, really quickly. Especially because, like we mentioned before, it was kind of about a love story. It was his feelings for, I keep wanting to call her Ellen now. Karen. And what he felt for her. And, you know, the way he saved her, she ended up basically falling in love with the Daredevil, not particularly Matt Murdock, and how everything went down, and anyone who would dare mess with her, any villain that would, you know, threaten her, or if her life was in danger, he didn't care. He was going to be there regardless to save her. That was his...
It was nice to see a story.
And his regret, sorry to interrupt you, his regret for not having, I don't know. Ugh, I just had the thought in my head. And now I don't know what I was going
to
say.
Well, he took so much time in the beginning of their relationship to make sure that she was constantly protected. And if you read the rest of, like, Daredevil canon, like, if you go back and read the Frank Miller stuff and you read Kevin Smith did a very popular, well-known book for Daredevil that kind of brought him back to the limelight, you'll see how emotionally charged and kind of heartbreaking this story ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
When you see, because you know that it ends with her dying,
but it was like
a
double heartbreak, though.
Yeah.
I felt, me personally.
Yeah.
Because he references the gym that his dad was always training in, so he talks about that and the loss that he feels about that
void.
That void in his life.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you've already found out, based upon how he's talking, is that she's gone.
Yeah.
She's no longer in his life. And he's just on his own.
Would you agree that the most interesting superheroes, or vigilantes, or whatever you want to call them, comic book characters, the most interesting ones are the ones who have the most losses? The ones who lose the most?
Yeah, because I think they are the ones that... They're the ones that... I feel like I'm losing the words today. They're the ones that, although have lost everything, feel like they have to fight the hardest to keep what they have.
Yeah.
The little that they have.
Yeah.
the memory of these people, the honor of these people.
Yeah.
It may not be much, but they're driven by that.
And I think that's it relates to the human condition when you read these books, as much as they're like people, oh, they're kiddie books, this, that, or the other. But these characters, when they're written with, when you actually read them, you see how much it relates to the human condition. Characters like a Spider-Man, Daredevil, Batman. Yeah, they're fantastic. Yeah, you have to, you know, completely throw out logic out the window sometimes to read a story. But it's the fact that they fall so much, mm-hmm. and they have to get back up and overcome it.
Yeah.
I think that's what's the enduring quality of them.
Yeah.
Like a Batman. People always say, what's the key to Batman? He always wins. That's true, but Batman loses really badly before he wins.
Mm-hmm.
He never just comes out and wins. He lives with those failures, and it motivates.
He started with a loss.
Everything he goes through, he always has to lose something extraordinarily big in his life. He's lost Robin. He's lost his parents. He's never been able to maintain a relationship. It's constantly happening for him. So mm-hmm. every time best friends, we go back to Hush. So it's constant loss in his life. Harvey Dent, he's always in front of these enormous losses he has to get back up and be better. Same thing with Daredevil, right? Daredevil's plagued, probably even more than Batman, with, this guy can't catch a break. But he gets back up and goes back to work the next day and makes sure
with a smile on his face,
as best as he can.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's inspiring, is that you can't relate to people putting on tights and the psychotic individual that would do that. We don't relate to that, but we can relate to the loss and having to overcome it and moving
mm-hmm.
on
mm-hmm.
and learning from it to succeed.
Yeah.
Using that to succeed. And I think Daredevil and Batman have that in common when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of loss, but they keep plugging away. So I'm happy you gave Daredevil a shot. I hope you read another book. Frank Miller stuff is great. If you want a more lighthearted Daredevil, more fun, kind of swashbuckling, adventurous Daredevil, that's still really good. Mark Waid, Daredevil, that has been out since, I think, 2011. I have them all in nice, large hardcover. You see me reading those.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun. So easy to read. So much fun. The art is fantastic, and it references a lot of the things that happened in his life. But even if you jump on at that point, you'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit more lighthearted. Mark Waid chose. Do you remember what you read from Mark Waid? You've definitely read something that you loved from him. Kingdom Come. Remember reading Kingdom Come? The Alex Ross.
Yeah.
That was Mark Waid.
Yeah.
Mark Waid is.
Isn't that in conjunction with Injustice? Or is that another one?
That's another one. Injustice is a comic book based on the video game that we played.
Oh.
But,
I feel like Injustice has the same artwork, though, no? Or am I confusing it with something else?
You're thinking of Justice.
Oh.
The Justice League, the three-part Justice League books that we had.
Yeah.
That's Alex Ross.
Yeah.
But Mark Waid wrote Kingdom Come with Alex Ross.
Okay.
But you would like it, because you liked that book a lot. I remember you enjoying it at the time. But, yeah, I hope you keep reading Daredevil. Next episode, we're going to do the Spider-Man Blue. So, what would you rank this Daredevil Yellow, out of 10? What would you give it, in your opinion?
I would probably give it a 6, 7.
Out of 10?
7.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Like I said, I'm not into I'm not really into the love story type of thing. And like I said, I feel like this story revolved around that a lot.
Okay.
But I think, in defense of what I just said, I think it was a love story between what he had with her, but also what he had with his father.
Okay.
So I think it makes sense, but it did revolve a lot around this particular girl.
Right.
And I'm not really a love story type of person.
Okay.
I think it was written very, very well. I liked it. I would recommend it. Okay. I think it was a nice, easy intro to understand pivotal characters, to see where they came from, how they influenced each other. I think it was a great book.
Great intro to the character.
Yeah.
Okay, but 7, that's not a bad rating, but
yeah.
Hey, that's your
7. I take the 6 back. I was what jumped into my head was Love Story, and I'm like, that's not what I pick up these things for.
Yeah.
I don't like chick flicks. I don't do none of that. I like the action. I like origin stories. I like the raw storytelling. I like coming to know the person based on what they've experienced in life, whether pain and heartache, not so much, but I guess that comes along with it. So yeah, I would say a 7.
Okay, cool. I think it's a good review. I would recommend it myself. I might give it a bit more than a 7, but yeah, I enjoyed it. This is my second time reading it. I did enjoy it again. Little things that I, like I said to you before, I think each issue may have been, I think, better suited if you would have directed it. Maybe one issue just to his dad, then an issue to Karen, you know, talking to the specific people in his life who were impactful in influencing him. I thought maybe that would have been a bit better, but I really like how Jeff Loeb goes back.
7.5.
You're giving me 7.5?
That's my final...
Final answer, final review. Yeah. You can't change it anymore.
No. All right. I'm content with 7.5.
Cool.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening again. This was a lot of fun. We'll be back very soon with the Spider-Man Blue. I've got to catch up to Daphne's reading because she's like crazy now. She's not even talking to me anymore.
Booyah.
You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Our website is up and running nice and smoothly.
And you can... Follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, cave_of_solitude Instagram. And the website's running smoothly, caveofsolitude.com. And leave us an iTunes review. It would be really helpful if you gave us your thoughts, whether it's good or bad. It doesn't matter. We want to hear your input. And thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Ciao. We're never going to see them. We should say we'll talk to them soon.
Whatever, you know what I mean. I get all technical all the time. I'm happy that you liked it, though. Did you know that they're making a Netflix series of Daredevil? Did I tell you that?
No.
Yeah, it's an exclusive Netflix series. They're going to do a bunch of them. There's going to be a Iron Fist and Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Drew. I could be mistaken, but yeah, Daredevil. And in all fairness, like, having read as much Daredevil as I have, I understand why they made a movie for it, because it deserves it. But it would be better suited as a TV show.
Do you know who's playing?
I don't know. I don't think it's like a well-known, like, household name yet.
So it's exclusive to Netflix?
It's exclusive. It's gonna be good. It has to be, because it's not... You're gonna get these episodes, like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As a series.
Hmm.
And the Daredevil story needs to be told like that. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, cool.
Do you like the costume in yellow and red, or just red?
I liked the yellow because of the sentimental value it held.
Yeah.
But I like the cleanness of the red, just one solid color. It's just one intimidating...
And like it's a devil, right?
Yeah.
The devil red, Daredevil. It kind of suits the
name. It fits the name.
The story goes is that artist Wally Wood, who took over the art on Daredevil in its early stages, kind of said, like, if Daredevil is a man without fear, why is he dressing up in the color of a coward?
Huh.
Right? Kind of makes sense. So they changed it.
And
to red.
Yellow is the color of fear.
Yeah. So it's kind of a little cool tidbit.
All right.
And there you go.
Schooled by Eric Anthony.
You gonna read Frank Miller first, or are you gonna read Mark Waid, Daredevil?
I think I'm gonna do Frank Miller.
It's good.
I think so. I like the, like I said, I like the dark twisted.
Yeah, that's the one for you.